This is podcast number 129. Thank you for joining us at Clinical Conversations, a podcast from Journal Watch, the medical research surveillance service whose website is jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. Dr. Danielle Schurer of the Medical University of South Carolina is also here. This time we focus on the dangers of non-aspirin, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, in early pregnancy. Earlier this week, the Canadian Medical Association Journal published a case-control study using Quebec's provincial health databases to examine whether non-aspirin NSAIDs were associated with spontaneous abortion before the 20th week of gestation. Indeed, it was. After adjustment for such confounding factors as the presence of arthritis or systemic lupus, the exposure to NSAIDs among women who had spontaneous abortion was nearly 2.5 times greater than among control women who did not have spontaneous abortions. We have the study's senior author, Dr. Annick Berard, as our guest. Dr. Berard is a professor in the Faculty of Pharmacy at the University of Montreal and director of the Saint-Justine Research Unit on Medications and Pregnancy there. Welcome, Dr. Berard.
Hello.
You set out to estimate the size of the risk, is that right? So the results were not a surprise, or were they?
They were not a surprise looking at NSAIDs overall because a previous study had shown an association between NSAIDs use during early pregnancy and an increased risk of spontaneous abortion. So, yes, it wasn't a surprise, but because of the data we had at hand, which is data on over almost 60,000 women from 1997 to 2009, we were able not only to look at NSAIDs use overall, but to look at specific types and at dosage. So that was really the novelty of this study.
It's the extent of the databases, of those provincial databases, that allows so much of this interesting research to come out of Canada lately, isn't it?
Yeah. I just want to open, like a little parenthesis here.
Mm-hmm.
The Quebec Pregnancy Registry, if we go back a little bit, how it was built and put together,
mm-hmm.
It was first put together by the linkage of three large databases, two of which are certainly administrative, and one is hospital-based. So the RAMQ is our universal healthcare coverage.
Mm-hmm.
It is true that it is an administrative database. It includes data on diagnoses, procedures, and medications. We have another database, which is called the ISQ. It includes data on births and deaths in Quebec, which is essential when you want to study deliveries or births,
mm-hmm.
for that matter. And we have a third database, which is our hospital database, which is MedEcho. And that is not an administrative database. It's not used for billing. It's used for patient follow-ups within hospitals. So data provided in this particular database have been shown to be valid in terms of when I'm talking about diagnoses. Yes, it was first and foremost built with the linkages of these three large databases. Quebec, we have over 7 million people in Quebec, so it is pretty big. To supplement this, the data provided by these databases, we actually contacted the majority of the women that were included in our study. Obviously, not all of them answered to our requests, but we contacted them to get information on smoking, on folic acid use, on weight, maternal weight, weight gain, and so forth, variables that are essential to the conduct of any perinatal pharmacoepidemiologic study. So this is the Quebec Pregnancy Registry is one of the largest registries put in place. And you're very right that in order to look at a pharmacological effect on adverse pregnancy outcome, you require very, very large cohorts, even if the exposure is very frequent and the outcome also is very frequent, such as this case here when we're talking about NSAIDs and spontaneous abortion.
And in your study, although you found an increased risk of spontaneous abortion in those prescribed an NSAID, there doesn't appear to be a dose response. response? So I was just curious your interpretation of that. Does that strengthen or weaken the argument for causality, or was your conclusion that this is sort of an all or none effect?
This is a very good question. We are in the in the field of observational studies. That, you know, we cannot get out of there. There's not going to be any randomized clinical trials performed on, well, let's say, the majority of the times, you know, women are excluded from large RCTs unless the drug is specifically designed to be given to pregnant women. So we have to rely on observational studies. So when you talk about causality, it is very true that within a specific study, because it's observational, it's difficult to tease out, you know, what is causal, what is not. In the field of observational studies, what leads to causation is really replication of findings, biological plausibility to start with. So the fact that this study actually replicates, although to a lesser extent, the results found in a previous study, for us is one step towards causality. We're not there yet. Other studies have to be performed looking at NSAIDs used during pregnancy. The fact that within our large cohort we were able to look at types and dosage is something that is particular to our registry because we have pretty good information on medication use. It is true that dose response relationship is another item that would lead to causality. And no, we didn't find that. Why? Well, it's probably because women were not exposed, because in our study, women were on average using NSAIDs around 6 to 8 days during pregnancy. So there's not, you can just imagine that the distribution is not that wide to allow a full analysis of dose response. So it's probably why we haven't been able to show a dose response relationship.
And in that same vein, I'm just curious, were you surprised by the number of pregnant women that were being prescribed NSAIDs? Even though the percentage was low, I was still a little surprised that, you know, upwards of 8% of the cases. And again, these were not under advice of a physician. These were prescriptions.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm going to tell you why, because it is true that we think women are pregnant, shouldn't be using medications. But in reality, it's very, very different. In Quebec, so our study population, over 50% of women will use medications during pregnancy. And that includes, you know, anything from NSAIDs to antiepileptic. You know, this, it's anything, you know, antibiotics, antidepressants. So, you know, pregnant women really use medications during pregnancy.
Yeah,
it is surprising, but they do.
Do you have any suspicion that this is not a class effect, that maybe the type of NSAID, you know, depending on if they're on the COX-1 or COX-2 end of the spectrum, makes a difference?
Using the data from my stuff, from our study, it leads me to believe that this is a class effect, okay? Because the increase in risk was seen regardless of the type of NSAIDs used, okay? Now you're probably leading to the fact that, you know, women that are using ibuprofen or naproxen, let's say in the U.S., over the counter are usually at lower dosage. Huh? So that we can agree. In our study, we still had, because of how the reimbursement system, not only to physician, but to people actually buying medications, the way the reimbursement system works, many women were actually buying ibuprofen, because here it's the only NSAIDs that is available over the counter, with a prescription, because they do get reimbursed for part of the cost of the drug. So from the results that we have in our study, I conclude that it is a class effect. I mean, the effect goes anywhere from an increase in risk of 1.8 to 3, right? So regardless of which NSAID is used, you're still at increased risk. The risk might be a little greater if you're on one type versus the other, but from the results that we have, we conclude that it is a class effect.
Yeah.
And going back to the OTC NSAIDs, although some women got probably, but it's impossible for us to measure, but probably got their OTC NSAIDs, ibuprofen, over the counter without a prescription. Yeah, it is possible, and it's certainly a limitation. However, this limitation is very unlikely to bias our results in a way that if we had considered ibuprofen OTC, we wouldn't have seen an effect. And I'm going to tell you why, because right before our study got published, there was no knowledge or no suspicion as to whether NSAIDs was increasing the risk of spontaneous abortion. You know, women went to the over-the-counter, they bought OTC, became pregnant. So NSAIDs was not a known risk factor for spontaneous abortion. So therefore, there's no reason right now, at the time of the study was performed, that women that actually miscarried versus those who didn't, but OTC NSAIDs in a higher or lower frequency than the others. So there could very well be misclassification of exposure. We missed some, and we acknowledge this in the study. We have missed some exposures during pregnancy because we were not able to assess NSAIDs OTC. However, given that the misclassification is probably non-differential, our estimate is an underestimate of the true risk. And this is just, you know, this is mathematical. It's, you know, it's a formula, and it's very, we were able to demonstrate that easily. So although we did miss some, and we acknowledge that, and it is a limitation, it does not bias our results in such a way that we're saying something that wouldn't have happened anyway if we had considered OTC.
Have your findings brought reactions from your clinical colleagues, Dr. Berard? I mean, have they? what have they said?
Okay, so there's two parts to that, so I have to be very diplomatic, and I will be.
Feel free.
obviously, I want to go. This study is funded by the FRSQ. So it's our, you know, it's the Quebec NIH, if you want to compare it.
Okay.
It's been peer-reviewed by competent people, CMAJ, you know. We know the journal. We went through the review and peer-reviewing process. So this is one thing. So you have to be very, very careful. It can very well go overboard when you consider that some of the those who have actually criticized, and there's not that many, you know, many of them are heavily sponsored by the industry. So this is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, when you do observational studies, you're always open to criticism, and this is fine, you know. Everybody can live with that. But criticism has to be based on facts. And when it's based on emotional things, it becomes irrelevant. So that being said, March of Dimes have reviewed the study. The College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists in the UK have reviewed the study. The Canadian Society of Obstetricians and Gynecologists have reviewed the study, and they all agree that it's an important piece in the risk associated, you know, and assessing the risk associated with medication use, and in this case, NSAIDs use during pregnancy. So it doesn't tell us everything because we studied one class of drug and one specific outcome, but it is certainly an important piece in the whole puzzle.
If
there were criticism, but,
if you could make a recommendation to clinicians for next week, seeing patients next week, what would you suggest that they do differently that they might have not done before this paper came out?
Well, I think responsibility has to be shared by the prescribers, obviously, but also by women, okay? I disagree, totally disagree on withholding information. I think we're not in the 1950s anymore. So more data is good. More good data is good. It empowers women, and women are more than capable of making their decision regarding their health. It's not because pregnancy, enables women to stop making good decisions. No. Women are able to do that, but they can only do that with good data. So, I am very, very pro more data. Now, if you use NSAIDs or you prescribe NSAIDs for acute condition such as pain, because this is the majority of use, pain, headaches, not migraine. Migraine, NSAIDs anyway should not really be used for migraine. So if you have a headache, if you have pain, and we all have that eventually, and you're planning your pregnancy, very important, please plan your pregnancy. There are safer alternatives that work just as well, and I'm thinking of acetaminophen. Okay, so those are acute use, and it goes for prescribers as well that do prescribe these drugs to women of reproductive age. However, if you're using NSAIDs to relieve you of flare-ups that would occur with rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, certainly plan your pregnancy, and that my recommendation holds true for any young or women of reproductive age that are planning, that are treating a chronic condition, please plan your pregnancy, okay? Discuss treatment options with your healthcare provider, your physician, and adjust it according to the best evidence that you have at hand. Sometimes it might mean using the drug and very, very careful monitoring during pregnancy. But if you think of RA or lupus, surprisingly, they get much better when women become pregnant. Flare-ups decrease, so you might not need NSAIDs as much as you would if you were not pregnant. But planning of pregnancy, acute versus chronic use, have to be viewed differently.
Well, that's good advice, Dr. Barrett, and I want to thank you for talking with us today.
It was my pleasure.
That was 129. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time. For myself and Dr. Danielle Schurer, thank you for listening.